Welcome to Tough Cookie Talks. I'm your host, Jenna Josephowski, but you can call me Jenna J. I'm a semi-retired professional dancer, dance teacher, and yoga teacher turned certified personal trainer and kettlebell instructor who helps active women learn to lift and get strong with equal parts challenge and compassion. After years of working in the fitness industry, I got sick and tired of watching people, including myself, run themselves into the ground trying to uphold the narrow-minded image of what our culture sees as healthy and fit. But instead of giving it all up, I decided that I'd rather change the game, call out the BS, extract the good, and help others learn to use movement as a way to build themselves up rather than tear themselves down. On this podcast, we'll explore the intersection of fitness and anti-diet culture and all the gray areas in between. We'll let go of shoulds and judgments and dig into tough conversations with curiosity. Things get pretty spicy around here, so grab your headphones and let's do this. Hey friends, welcome to Tough Cookie Talks. I'm back with yet another bonus collab crossover episode with Christina Montalvo. And today we're talking, well, we started talking about food and some of the weird shit that we did when we were in our dieting days. And it led into a really interesting and deeper conversation about how food is political. We talked a lot about how we help our clients and our friends kind of make that connection between dieting and other deeper political beliefs. We talk about how some people are probably going to leave me a one-star review after this episode, and I care not because a lot of you, I think, are really going to love and appreciate and resonate with it and hopefully get ready to take yourself to the next level with this stuff if you have not already done so. So anyway, let's go talk about all of that.
Hello, everyone. I'm back again with Jenna and Christina for a crossover episode. Hi, Jenna.
Hi, Christina.
What are we talking about today?
We're talking about food and like weird food shit that we used to do. And I feel like I need to give a little disclaimer here. Like, please do not use any of this stuff as like instructional. Cause I'm sure that we are probably about to talk about some really fucked up shit that we used to do around food. Come at this from a place of awareness. Like, do not take any of the ideas and actually do them if you're still in it in the ways that we used to be.
Yeah. I would take this episode as just like at least the first or the beginning part, like a cautionary tales, like things to not do
because they were terrible ideas by us.
Yeah. All right. You go first. What's like a weird food thing that you used to do?
All right. I think the weirdest thing that I did, I don't even know where I want to begin. Do I want to start at the beginning or do I want to start like at what caused me to give it all up in the first place?
I think just give us an example of something that was weird, like the behavior.
The behavior? Okay. So I think about when I was what I believe to be like super orthorexic. There are so many food rules that I had that I wouldn't eat. Like right before we hit record on this, we got on the food topic because I decided to go get myself a snack, which turned into a whole lunch because I realized what time it was. And I was eating this like quinoa lentil salad thing that I got from Costco. I feel like even that, like if you listen to that, you're like, oh, that sounds really like healthy or whatever. I would not have purchased that salad from Costco many years ago, depending on what iteration of whatever I was in, because I definitely did the thing where like, I couldn't eat grains, mm-hmm. couldn't eat beans. Mm-hmm. The dressing potentially had some kind of like oil that was not like, you know, the purest, most ideal oil that was not an industrial seed oil or whatever. And it probably had some like sugar in it. And like the cucumbers and the tomatoes probably weren't organic. So like this whole like quinoa lentil salad, which was delicious and like nourishing and like really convenient.
Convenient. Yeah.
And not that expensive because I got a bunch of it at Costco. I wouldn't have eaten that. I wouldn't have bought that. Is that like, that just sounds pretty ridiculous when I think about that. I found at least 5 things wrong with this fucking salad that I just had. And it's a salad.
I wouldn't have eaten it. And again, it depends. Like, I guess we can just use the quinoa salad as the example. And I can give you 12 years worth of different reasons why I wouldn't have eaten it. I think, right? Like to your point, it's like, there's a million different reasons why I wouldn't have eaten the quinoa salad. And it just depends on which chapter of my dieting bullshit I was on. I think for me, like the macro one, like it would have been really hard to measure. Like, wait, if I can't measure exactly how is this one cup of quinoa? Is it 3/4 of a cup? Like it would have been hard to track it. So it got to the point for me where I stopped eating food that was not easily measurable and trackable.
Okay. And you know, I briefly dabbled in the macros thing, but I wasn't super precise with it because I am not a super precise person in general. Like if I was counting macros and doing that whole, like whatever fits your macros thing, I might've looked at that quinoa salad, guesstimated, let that be good enough and still put it in my Fitness Pal. And like in my head, I would have justified that like, this is fine. And I was tracking my macros, but.
So I did that also. And then when you get to your weigh-in on Friday and you're the same weight or up a pound, then at least for me, I was like, oh, and we're not at a shortage of like content out there that's like telling people how to get better and more precise at tracking your macros, which right. is what it takes.
Yeah. Like,
that's the whole point. It's about the precision part of it. I am also not a detail. I'm a big picture person. Mm-hmm. I like the big pictures. I don't tend to like it's why I don't like baking.
Yes, same. I hate baking.
I hate baking. Oh my God. And you want to know what it is? Here's what's funny about me and baking. For years, I convinced myself that the precision of baking didn't matter. So I just kept ruining stuff. I'm like, what do you mean 1/8 of a tablespoon? I'm like, who gives a shit about being precise about 1/8 of a tablespoon? And I guess with baking, it matters.
Well, and there's certain steps in baking that are very tedious, but actually very important. Like I remember one time I was baking these brownies. And I remember texting my mom because I was supposed to like let the butter thaw like out on the kitchen counter, but like I didn't plan ahead and I didn't have time for that. So I put it in the microwave, but then it exploded butter in the microwave. And like my mom told me, like, you can't do that. But just precision. No.
And I don't like anything with that many rules. So of course, macro counting, which it's funny because for me, macros was presented as like freedom and flexibility and options. But if you want to use, I mean, the flexibility and the freedom and the options of macros only go so far. You have to measure and track. And there were so many parts of it that was so far away from how my brain organically works that that's why it was one of the reasons why it was such a mess for me.
And when you were tracking macros, where was your headspace around like your body and your weight? What was your goal around that?
That's such a good question. I feel like there was a part of me that was like, well, fuck it. Like, let's just fuck around and find out and see how lean I can get.
Yeah.
And there was another part of me that genuinely didn't know how else to eat. I genuinely did not. At that point, I had spent so many years so disconnected from my body, from my preferences, from my hunger cues, from really anything happening from the neck down. I was so disconnected. It was all cerebral, right? Like the Einstein mathematic equation of feeding yourself. And so I think a large part of macros for me was like, I literally do not understand any other way to feed myself.
Huh. Interesting. Because, you know, when I was doing the macros thing, I would have very much told myself that I did not have an eating disorder anymore. And I will say that because I had at that point for several years ceased to have any like clinical eating disorder behaviors that would have diagnosed me for a clinical eating disorder. Mm-hmm. And I was at a size at that time, my weight never really fluctuated a whole lot. And so I feel like I was just in this place where I was like, quote unquote, like fine with where I was, but I kind of just wanted to like lose 5 pounds and be a little more toned or whatever. So I wasn't looking for anything drastic and I never would have admitted to anyone that I was trying to lose weight.
Oh no, never.
But secretly.
Yes.
Secretly, that's what I still wanted. But actually, like I was just trying to be healthy.
And I think I thought at that time too, to your point, that like, I think the mindset I was in was that I needed to be shredded.
Okay.
Like I knew, like general population out in the world, I knew that I already had a fit body. Like I knew that I had that. And still there was a part of me of like, make it more obvious. You know, the Kermit, have you ever seen Evil Kermit? Those memes, it's like Kermit the Frog. And then it's Kermit wearing like the dark hood.
No,
I'm not. No, you don't know what I'm talking about. Okay. So there was that. And like the dark Kermit was like, just get even more lean. And I was like, okay. Mixed with the, when I say that I didn't know how else to feed myself, what I mean by that is also like, I didn't know how to eat without gaining weight. So I was restricted for so long that without something to contain, what I felt like was this innate desire to constantly eat that I felt that dieting had fixed really just gave me rules and gave me less options and less flexibility to explore food. Macros, I think, was my last ditch attempt at like keeping my train on the track. And then what switched for me was when I was like, oh, I feel out of control around food because I'm controlling food.
And what made you finally figure that out? Like, what was your fuck this I'm done moment? And how did you get introduced to
it? Was my client. So it was my clients. I had to observe it in my clients first before I never would have just seen it, I think, in myself. It was a number of things. I worked a large part of the beginning of my career. I worked directly with medical teams, with young women going through clinical eating disorders, inpatient and outpatient programs. Yeah. And the fucked up part about that was I was telling my quote unquote overweight or my fat loss or my weight loss clients to do the same shit that my anorexic clients were doing that landed them in a hospital.
Wow.
And it's the same because you're like, oh, you're hungry. Just drink more water. Well, when you're saying that to a 350 pound woman, the world is like, correct. She's eating too much food, drink more water. But how come that same piece of advice to a client who weighs less than 100 pounds is exactly what got her in the hospital in the first place? It was noticing the disconnect between how the weight bias, how I was showing up with implicit fat bias and literally telling my fat loss clients to do disordered shit all in the name of losing weight.
Wow.
And literally walking out of a fat loss session into an eating disorder session and watching myself be a hypocrite. Wow. It was that. It was so disorienting. So then that caused me like an initial pause of like, wait a minute, what did I just say? Like, what am I saying? Yeah. And then you feel like a fraud because you're like, oh, well, what am I supposed to say to my 350 pound client?
Yeah.
And then begins the unraveling and the unpacking of weight bias.
Yeah. Right?
That's where it kind of began. The second thing that happened not too long after that was, through a different lens. You start to see your clients and listen to your clients through a different lens. It was a couple months of clients before their weigh-in. I feel amazing. I'm sleeping better than ever. I'm stronger than ever before. I feel great. You weigh them in, you ruin their whole fucking day.
Yep.
Unless the scale goes down or their measurements went down or whatever, if the goal is something to do with their body, weight loss, fat loss, aesthetics, whatever, you ruin if they don't give a shit that they're sleeping better than ever before. They don't give a shit that they're stronger because there's this taunting carrot of, but you didn't lose any weight.
Yeah.
And I was like, what do I care about delivering more? I'm doing all these things for these clients. They're loving it. It's the weight loss piece that's making them miserable. What happens if we just get rid of the weight loss piece?
Yeah.
And then the rest is history.
Wow. I don't think that I knew that that's how.
Really?
Yeah. You got into it. Cause you know my story with it, right?
What was it called? You did that one thing, 30 day.
The whole 30.
Whole 30. Yeah.
The whole 30. And if any of you are listening to this on my podcast, Tough Cookie Talks, it's one of the very first episodes. It's like somewhere between like 1 through 5. The episode is called The Whole Truth, My Experience with Elimination Diets. Because it started very innocently, I'll make this like long story short, with, I had come back from a trip to Europe with my husband where I had just, you know, like I hadn't done much like formal exercise, like a lot of drinking, a lot of just like eating bread and pastries and cheese and, you know, things like that. And I was like super jet lagged. So I got home and I was like, I low key feel like garbage. And what it actually probably was like jet lag and a long-term hangover.
Mm-hmm.
But I decided that I needed to do like a detox of sorts. And I had heard of people I knew doing the Whole 30. So, I went all in with it, got like real obsessive about restricting all kinds of food groups. If you know anything about that particular program, like there's rules for why you can't eat, grains, gluten, certain kinds of oils, beans, soy, peanuts, alcohol, sugar, joy. You couldn't have like a smoothie for breakfast because it was like drinking your calories. Like there were just so many rules around it. I did it once around that time. And I also had like a lot of other issues happening at that time. Like I had some like itchy rashes that I couldn't explain. I think it was just anxiety. I outlined that in the episode. But I just went off the deep end. I was convinced that there were like chemicals in my laundry detergent that were causing this. And I like just went all in with eliminating everything from my like skincare to my like household care to, you know, my food and stuff like that. And at the end of the time, I felt worse and I had gained weight.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told, as we're all told by the diet industry and wellness culture and everything, that like, if the protocol is not working for you, then you just didn't do it right and you didn't do it hard enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a second round.
Mm. 60-day fix.
Same result, only worse.
Oh.
And at that point, I was just like, fuck it, I'm done.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just started seeking alternative resources because I, like at that point, I didn't know what else to do. I was like, I did this the hardest and it still didn't work for me. So I'm done.
I never did the Whole 30 at that point. Like I had, by the time I found macros, I already knew that like food rule, like I wasn't afraid of beans. Like I understood both the minutiae. Like I had the Krebs cycle memorized for years. Like I had a minor, I got a minor in nutrition. Like there was a lot of like food science that I already, not even food science, that's not true, but fat loss science really.
Yeah.
That I had already understood. I think for me, the confusion came in for a while with differentiating between nutrition versus fat loss.
It was
navigating though the similarities of that I think kept me confused and stuck for a really long time. And it wasn't until literally learning more about nutrition or food or weight loss, whatever, is not what helped me at all. It was more about like the liberation of women and like bodily autonomy and choice and power and patriarchy that really got me to be like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, I'm seriously... like there's something so intimate about the pleasure of food that it makes sense that the world takes it away from us. Like you can't taste how good this pizza tastes for me. Only I'm going to experience this pleasure for myself.
Yeah.
And yet I was like, oh no, I'm better than needing the pleasure of pizza. Like just so that I can be 5 pounds less. Like, I don't know, that I'd rather enjoy the pizza.
Yeah. Same.
You know what I mean? So I think a lot of people go, and I did this too, right? Like more information. Let me learn more. Let me get another certification. When really it was learning about the systems and the powers that made me so obsessed with my body in the first place.
Yes, I would agree. That was an entire game changer.
Tell me more.
It just really was, you know, I'm like, I don't know the whole story about what happened with this, but like, do you remember Naomi Wolf?
She a supermodel?
No, author of the beauty myth.
Yeah, that bitch went rogue. And yes. I freaking had to apologize for quoting her everywhere.
Yes, same.
Yeah. What an asshole.
I don't even know what she did necessarily. Like, I can't even remember at some point. Like she just did some super problematic shit. Do you remember what it was?
She just, I blatantly came out, was an anti-vaxxer, pro-Trumper, conspiracy, blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm pretty sure she was also, what's the cult?
QAnon?
That's what she was. She became a QAnon supporter.
Conspiracy theorist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. But her, like, I hate to say this because she's been so awful, but like her book, The yes. Beauty Myth, blew yes. my mind.
Same.
And then I feel like just led me down this like rabbit hole of so many other things. But I remember specifically that book was like, holy fuck.
And the problem with that, like to your point, so the one quote that I always say from Naomi Wolf is
probably the same as
start?
I do.
How do, yeah, I think it's the same. How does that quote start? Goddamn.
I posted on my Instagram before the one about,
obedience.
Obedience. No. Hold on. Wait, hold on.
It's about obedience.
I feel like I'm going to Google this now.
I'll Google it too.
It's driving me nuts.
It's not about female. It's like something about how it's not about female beauty. It's about female obedience.
Yeah.
Female obedience. Naomi Wolf.
A culture fixated on female thinness is not an obsession about female beauty, but an obsession about female obedience. Dieting is the most potent political sedative in women's history. A quietly mad population is a tractable one.
And the irony is that then Naomi Wolf went on to become a QAnon conspiracy theorist, which is why I fully believe that we cannot talk about any of this stuff without talking about white supremacy.
Exactly.
Which means that to unpack this work, we need to look at how a culture obsessed with thinness is also a culture obsessed with whiteness and Eurocentric beauty standards. 100%.
Yep. Yep. Yes. And then, so now I feel like I need to, like, because that book was like the initial first unraveling, I feel like I now need to highlight other books, like The Body Is Not an Apology or mm-hmm. Fearing the Black Body.
Yes.
And be like, Strings. Next steps.
Yes.
Go there. Because I feel like The Beauty Myth was like an intro for me. Mm-hmm. But like those ones really hit it home in a lot of ways, because then at that point, like you look at your values and you're like dieting is no longer something that I'm not interested in doing, but it's not aligned with my values and who I am. It feels like a betrayal of everything you believe in.
How would you help someone get to that point, Jenna, of like knowing? Because I feel like, so I say the same things, like, and I have the same conversations kind of like with my clients, whatever, of like, is this aligning with your values? Is this dieting or weight control, like these behaviors, are they aligned with your values? And I feel like some people have a hard time even like getting in the place in their brain where they're like, oh, this does conflict with my values. Like, do you have an example of like what that disconnect might look like for someone so they can?
Yeah. This wasn't with a client. It was actually with a good friend of mine who has a lot of very progressive social views. And her daughter is in high school and her daughter shares a lot of the same progressive social views. And she's very outspoken. Like her daughter is, her daughter doesn't give a shit what anybody says. Like she's super cool. Her parents raised her that way. She supports that. But then my friend came to me, because her daughter is stressing because she's gained some weight and she doesn't like it. And so my friend came to me because she's like, I don't know what to do or how to guide her around this. Like, I know it's a slippery slope. This is kind of your jam. I don't want her to develop an eating disorder, but I also like, you know, I hate seeing her upset about this weight gain and I don't know what to do. And, you know, I told her from the perspective, and I think this is true for any of us, you kind of have to find the in with that person. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I suggested was to expose her daughter to some of the ways being so hyper concerned about her weight was out of alignment with other things that she cared about, for example, like Black Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at that point, I think I actually recommended Chrissy King's new book to her because I thought that would be like a good entry point for her to kind of get into that. Cause she's already, sometimes people can't necessarily articulate like, oh, these are my values, but like they have a Black Lives Matter sticker on their water bottle and get fired up about certain topics. And it's like, oh, have you considered that this is kind of the same thing?
It's exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
Totally.
What do you think about that? How are you asking me that? Cause you're curious how I would approach it. Do you have a different way that you approach it or
no,
something?
No, I just think I think like what you're saying, like I've had, many conversations where people, I think they're like, yes, I can see, or I understand that this can be a conflicting value, but I don't know how to assess whether for me, this is a conflicting value. So I think that was a great example of like, do you believe that Black Lives Matter? And that's a value, right? We can see that as a value. And we can also look at, gosh, how is dieting or trying to control the size and shape of my body a competing kind of value with that? And I would have to say that there's probably, maybe should we break that down more? Do you think that people won't be able to see how that's, they're not the same, or they're, how they are conflicting values?
I feel like I don't know what your audience is like. I feel like half of my people are going to get it and probably know more than I do. And half of my people are like, what?
So, yeah, I think my audience is probably the
same. I mean, do you have any episodes on your podcast specifically that break that down? Because I do.
Yeah. I feel like that's all I talked about in 2020. I would say between 2020 and 2022, most of my episodes talk about that.
What season of your podcast was that?
Season one still. I think season one has like 200 something episodes.
Oh, wow. You had a long season one.
Yeah. Season one started in 2015.
So my podcast is a little bit newer. My season one started last year. I'm like scrolling through this right now, trying to find.
We can always link it in the show notes too.
I will. My episode with Simone Samuels is a really, really good breakdown of that. It's the episode, I cannot tell what number it is because it's not showing that in Apple, but it's called Cultivating Anti-Racism in Your Fitness Community with Simone Samuels. That's a really good one. I feel like there are other ones that I definitely like dabble in it with people or allude to it, but like that's the biggie.
Yeah. I think for at least I'd say half my audience, I think that my personal and professional recommendation is like, we have to understand the macro implication of this and the micro implication. And for me, I needed to make peace with the micro. So just like me, Christina, in my life, in my body, I needed to kind of understand that first before I could see the macro, like in terms of the disconnect of values. I was like, oh, I'm struggling on a macro with me and myself. And I needed to fix that before I could go. And I think really even understand, like the monolith of fitness community. Does that make sense?
Yes. And you know what? I think for me, my unraveling of all of this kind of came at an interesting time. And I think I mentioned this before. It was, around 2016, like around the time that Trump got elected. And so on one hand, I'm listening to like the awful things that he was saying and getting so pissed off about them. And then listening to podcasts that were maybe talking about like body image stuff, or, you know, potentially starting to dig deeper or introducing people that were talking about things like anti-racism or other kind of social justice issues. And me having this big moment where like, oh my God, these things are the same. And my mind was blown, but I think that was a unique circumstance because there were a lot of big things happening at once that like, yeah, there's a lot of big things happening now, but I feel like that was a really pivotal moment in history.
I agree. I think we've had multiple like pivotal moments in history. And for me, we talked about this on a previous episode together, like each pivotal moment continued to thin the herd for me as I would reorient myself in life with this new set of information.
Yes.
Like when Trump was voted or elected in, I needed to reorient myself in how in my own life, because what I thought to be true about the world was no longer fucking true.
Yes.
Like no longer true. And I think we either grow into people who continue to pay attention when things like that happen and dig and ask and pay attention and learn and like confront the discomfort of like, oh my God, what does it mean now that Donald Trump is president and how does that affect me? Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't affect me, what am I going to do about that? Like that was a big thing, right? Like, that was that point of like, oh, it doesn't affect me that Trump is in office drew a lot of fucking lines in the sand for me. Like, I needed to then get curious about what it meant about me if I was surrounded myself with people that weren't affected and didn't care.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? And the same thing is true with like fitness and fat loss. It's kind of the same thing. Like weight bias affects those that are oppressed, fat people.
Yep.
Yep. And like, and that happens on a macro and a micro level too. You know, the micro level is, and we hear this all the time, I don't care if other people are fat. I just don't want to be fat. That I think is how that shows up more often. And that's a really tricky place to be, I think.
And I think that's also in a lot of cases, a place that people need to go through.
Mm-hmm.
And we almost coming back to your question about like, how do I help my clients make that connection and take that next step? I think, and I had a hard time with this in the beginning, of being like super militant with my beliefs and like shouting them at people before they were ready to hear it and almost pushing them away, where in theory, I needed to kind of sit back and listen a little bit more and figure out where I had an in. Because in talking to you about like my friend's daughter, for example, like that is one example of many, but I think before I just started teaching or started like recommending all of these books or like recommending people to other teachers who were teaching about this, I needed to just listen to what that person was saying and be like, oh, I hear this is important to you and this is important to you. And I hear this, and you find that little crack and you just fill it. Now I love speaking in analogies. I think of like a crack in like a rock or like a crack in a foundation. You find that little crack where you have an in and you just like trickle some information in there. And then that starts to erode the old belief system. And you just keep trickling stuff in there over time and it eventually just completely crumbles. But in order to do that, I don't know, you have to really meet people where they are. And you also have to decide whether that's like a client or someone in your personal life, if that is somebody that even is willing taking that on, or like, I guess, worth taking that on with, or if they even have the capacity or the little cracks to let that in.
Yeah. I don't, are you talking specifically about like, still the values thing, like with weight loss and stuff?
Yeah. Like the values thing. So for example, if somebody is like foundation is built on like, you know, I just want to be skinny. I just want to be toned, whatever. And that's like their foundation of values, but they also, you know, say something about how they're really upset that abortion rates are being taken away. There's a little in there. There's a little in there that you can start to take that path.
Yeah. There is someone in my personal life who I like, at just as an example, they have that exact same set of competing values and they are not ready. And I don't think they will ever be ready to separate those things. There is no crack, because I think the glue in the crack is their identity.
Oh, interesting.
This identity of I am a thin, conventionally attractive, Eurocentric beauty is my currency.
Yeah.
That's their currency. And in their defense, I suppose, I don't agree with it. I don't agree with that at all. It works for them. It's almost like, why would you throw away your biggest bargaining chip?
Well, and that's like when I talk about like the fuck this, I'm done moments. Mm-hmm. You, each person has to reach a point where it is no longer working for them.
Right.
To the point where they just cannot. And so until you're like ready to receive that information, because I wouldn't have been ready to receive any of this information a couple of years prior until I had gone through all of the other life experiences.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, I needed to just allow myself to experience life as someone who, like, I needed to experience my life through my own set of eyes instead of through like the male gaze. Like, that's how yeah. I lived. Like, I lived my life in such a way, almost like if this was a movie, like, am I like the hot one? Am I like, like, do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. it's the role. It feels like you're playing a role. And we as women are conditioned to play the role of like pleasing to the male gaze. That's the beauty myth, right? The patriarchy and men decide like what makes us worthy of looking at. And it's just all of that bullshit. And it got to the point where, probably around the same time, maybe a little bit before the whole Donald Trump thing, but I had, you know, just through, my own therapy and like, I wasn't married at the time. So like dating in like your mid 20s, I think like shaped a lot of my self-worth in a way of like, pleasing men is not why I'm alive on this planet.
Yeah.
I don't give a fucking flying shit if someone thinks I'm chubby. Like, of all the things, like, I think I've said this on a previous episode with you, like, of all the things I could be, like, why do I care?
Yeah. Well, do you ever think about this? I feel like if I had to date again right now,
good question.
I would have an awful time finding somebody who I could like fully be myself around, you know, kind of like we were talking about like in the friendship episode, like knowing like how you can fully express yourself. And I think like it's different because I'm very different than I was when I first got with Eric, but also like he's been here through this whole process. Like he's seen and watched the evolution of it and has kind of like grown in it with me. Where I think if I were to say some of the things that I say to Eric, you know, on a date with like somebody new, not even a first date, but like even later in a relationship, like how few people that would probably go over with, or how hard it would be for me to express that. Like, I'll just walk into the house and be like, this isn't patriarchal bullshit.
This is going to sound so weird. I think I'm so comfortable. Like, I am so comfortable in my body and how I think, and which is relatively new for me. Mm-hmm. I'd say within, I guess, since like turning 30, maybe, I don't know. I'm like, oh my God, I just don't give a shit if someone gets what I'm saying or doesn't get. I think there's a part of me that would have so much fun with dating because I don't care if the guy is comfortable or doesn't like me or doesn't accept me. So like if the, on a date, whether it's the first date or the 30th date, if a guy was like, what do you mean patriarchal bullshit? I'd be like, you're either actually asking because you're curious to learn, or like, you don't care and I'm leaving the dinner. I don't know. No. Like, it would be exciting for me.
Well, okay. So I think that yes, but also I think for me, I think it depends. And like, I almost wouldn't know how I would be in that situation. For example, like if you go on a couple of dates with somebody and you really like everything about them and you want things to go well, and then you're almost afraid to like throw that out there initially. But on the flip side, because of that, I feel like if I had to put an online dating profile up, like, have you ever seen people like screenshot online dating profiles where the guy just says completely ridiculous shit, you know, like, want a woman that is not over this amount of pounds and must have her own car, preferably a minivan, so she can drive my kids around. So my kids are my world.
Like, but that you saw that. That was an actual one, though. You saw
who
that,
posted
right?
that? Yes.
I don't remember, but I saw like exactly what you're saying. And the guy already had his own 3 children. Wanted a wife, right? On a dating app, wasn't?
Yeah, must be submissive.
Must be submissive, must have a car to drive my kids around, but she wasn't allowed to have her own children.
Yes.
That's what the stipulation was on this dating app bio.
Okay. And I feel like
fuck all of that.
Yes, fuck all of that. But I also feel like my dating profile, if I had to put one up now, a lot of men would look at it and be like, fuck all of that, because like it would deter so many people. I would be like, you know, must be like, what would we say? I'm thinking about it.
So I was just on a little mini road trip with some friends a couple weeks ago, and they are all single, which is so fun for me. And not even like single in like a wild, like let's go to Vegas and get fucked up way, but just in like a, I don't know. It kind of feels like being in college when we're all together. Minus me. Like there's not like, oh, my boyfriend, oh, my husband. Like it's just girl time. It's so nice. Yeah. And so we were talking about their dating profiles, and I asked them, and we all have similar worldviews, political views, like racial, social justice, whatever. And it was so interesting to hear each of them explain, like one of them who's of the four of us, she's, I'm just going to say it how I say it in my real life. She's the whitest. She's the richest. She's the most privileged. She's the most conservative. Although she's not conservative, she's the most conservative. And she was like, I would never put anything like that on my bio because I want to talk about it like in person. Cause what if it's not a deal breaker? And me and the other girl were like, I don't even want to fucking have to take 30 seconds out of my day to go and have dinner with you if I find out that you're a Trump supporter. Like I need 100% to figure that out.
100%. I'd be like,
ASAP, we have to figure that out.
Yes. 100%.
That's how I feel.
100%. Yes. Right? I feel like I would put it out there. I mean, same way as I do like on my Tough Love Strength Club application.
Yes.
And I do this too. Like I have, and I probably feel like I need to update it now and put like a few more questions.
Sure.
Like I have a question on there that says Tough Love Strength Club is a space where Black Lives Matter, does this align with your values too?
Mm-hmm.
Yes or no? And the answer has to be yes. Otherwise, you're not in. I mean, nobody ever answers no, but I'm curious how many people just like click close after.
Yes. So that's exact. I was just going to say that like your dating profile is going to follow the exact same principles of online business. Like it's the same. And business in general, it's the same. Mm-hmm. And like the more you try to appeal to everyone, the less of yourself you become. And like, you know what I mean? Like you niche down in dating the same way you niche down in business. It's the same, you know?
Well, and I almost feel like too, especially having been in a long-term relationship for a long time right now. And like on our last episode, we talked about, you know, dealing with men and stuff like that. There are certain things about living with a man that honestly, sometimes being single would probably be easier.
So much easier.
Especially, and now I say this like with the acknowledgement that Eric and I don't have any major discrepancies in terms of like values or like political beliefs or anything like that. So all of that is good. But like, I'll tell you what, like I'm already annoyed that you left 18 cups around the house. Like you're the fucking little girl from Signs. Have you seen that movie?
Yeah.
With the cups of water. Yes. Like I'm already so annoyed with your cups. Like if I got a deal with your conservative ass on top of all of your cups, like I cannot, the cups are already all I can take.
So the way that I was going to say this was like, I don't know. So let's just pretend I don't even know if I should say this.
Just say
I don't know what I would do. Like if it's 2023, right?
Yeah.
Say I was single and I'm on a dating app, like, and say I go on a date with a guy and we end up having sex. If the next morning I found out he was a Trump supporter, I don't know what I would do with myself. Like knowing that I fucked.
I feel like I need to know that you're not a Trump supporter before I have sex with you.
That's exactly my point. Like, because I don't know what I would do with myself if I did fucked a Trump supporter and didn't know that I was fucking a Trump supporter, like because of how I would feel, I need to know if you're a Trump supporter before I fuck you. Sorry.
Well, there's all sorts of things. And maybe this is me. I don't know. Sometimes I question myself if I'm just making all sorts of overgeneralizations, but at this point I don't care. I feel like if you're supporting that, there are probably also all sorts of other misogynistic beliefs that are going to show up in the way that you treat me in our relationship.
So hold on. Okay. So I don't want to get too far into this because I know we're going to do a topic on this in the future, but
my husband is a police officer.
Yes.
And so what this means is that he spends an awful lot of time with people that I do not align with on a personal level. And that yes. is the juiciest conversation just waiting to happen. And something that I less now, but way, way more back in like 2020, 2021, how many times I had to say, like, it's not actually just about Trump. It's yeah. not just about Trump. Like Mike would say something about one of his coworkers or one of his family members. And I'd be like, something like, oh, Trump supporter. And he's like, they're not a Trump supporter. I'm like, Trump supporter is a big umbrella term. It's actually not just about, did you vote for Donald Trump? It's like, in general, like, are you conservative? Are you a racist piece of shit? Like, what are your views on gay marriage? And like, what views do you have on guns? Like that, when I say Trump supporter, it's like all of those things. It's not just like, do you like Donald Trump?
Right. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
It's more than just that.
It's like, it's like, do you actively not like him? Because I feel like it's just all like, he is like an all encompassing
idea. Yeah.
Idea for all of the things. So it's almost like you need to like, not just not like him. You need to fucking hate him. Wow. And this episode was supposed to be about food.
I was just going to say.
Oh my God.
But you know what? It is all about food because food is political. Women's bodies are political. Fitness is political. Like on some level, we can't talk about fitness. We can't talk about food. We can't talk about dieting without talking about politics. And we can't discuss dieting without discussing oppression. And oppression automatically brings up politics. Like, I like that we ended up this far down a weird path because food's political.
Food is political. Maybe one day we'll talk about all the other fucked up things that we did about food. Maybe that's the episode title. Food is political. And now I'm thinking about how somebody's going to get pissed off when they listen to this. And they're going to leave me a 1-star review. Like the Jenna J hates the Constitution one that I got.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think they're going to say to this one? Jenna hates Donald Trump.
I don't know what they're going to say.
Can I say something?
Like, yeah.
I actually hate the Constitution. Like I will go on record to say like, I disagree with the Constitution. Please leave me a 1-star review. Somebody saying that I hate the Constitution
okay.
because you're fucking correct. I do hate the Constitution.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you want to, if you're listening to this right now and you're about to go leave me a 1-star review, please do it. Mm-hmm. Because number one, I will cackle. Like when I read this review, I cackled. Mm-hmm. Like literally LOL. I was putting JJ to sleep and I think I woke him up. Cackled at this 1-star review. And like good, because if people read that review, now they're going to know exactly what I'm all about and they're not going to waste their time here.
Yeah.
So if you don't like this conversation, bring it on.
I've just decided that nobody, like in, at least in my world, I don't have the time to listen to a podcast that I like disagree with. So in my mind, nobody listening will disagree. And like, you just wasted an hour of your time and that's your problem, not mine.
Yeah. Unless they don't realize what they're getting themselves into. I will say, and this is a very interesting conversation for maybe another day. I think a lot of people are sometimes surprised by me. Mm-hmm. And not if they've been around for a while, but I mean, if you like at a glance, like, I am a white woman. Mm-hmm. I don't even know how else to describe myself. Like I have every privilege, but like being a man, essentially. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And people look at that and they come to my page and I have like bright colors and I'm smiling and I'm being silly. And for a lot of people, that's very palatable, mm-hmm. I think. And so they maybe come on thinking that this is going to be like a love and light kind of space only and mm-hmm. good vibes only, because I think have like a lot of good, like happy vibes. I just don't think sometimes people realize how much go fuck yourself comes along with that until they get to know me better.
That's so interesting. I don't think that my lack of like Jenna-ness gives anyone a reason to even preconceive that I'm who I am.
What do you mean?
Like, I don't think that you're, I think it's unpalatable, even if you didn't have like positive vibes and bright colors and like whatever. I think it's just white supremacy. And like, that is everyone's, I think, basis level of functioning. It's like diet culture.
Yes.
Like, most people are seeing everything. So anything that's off center of diet culture is automatically like, oh, that's weird. I don't know if I want to be here. And yeah. I think anything that's not like white power, white supremacy, like dripping with that, like the woo-woo pretty girl white culture, I think no matter what, whether you were obviously go fuck yourself, I think like I am a little bit more, or yeah. maybe more vibrant and cheerful like you, I think no matter what, it's disorienting for people.
Yes.
Because I feel like I'm overtly like, go fuck yourself. Like I'm just yes. like, seriously, like go fuck yourself. And I'm not going to feel bad. Like I don't feel bad about that. And I think even coming in with that energy, I think people are still like, oh my God. And she's a liberal. Like people just can't.
No matter you what. Still get that too.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily a me problem. I think maybe because perhaps there are certain things about me that people might look at me and assume that I might be a more conservative person.
Do you think that's a projection?
Probably. I don't know. You want to unpack that one?
I let people show me who they are. Maybe it's yeah. a me thing. I like don't, you want to know who I judge the most is like who? Old white crotchety men automatically. Totally. I'm like, 100%. You're for sure not going to be nice. And then I let them surprise me if it's going to be surprising. Like I go in with an open mind, but with a little bit of doubt of like, you're going to say something racist and I'm
yeah.
bracing, but I'm going to try.
Yeah.
Maybe 1% of the time I'm pleasantly surprised. But other than that, I think, so here's what it is actually, Jenna. So I'm coming at this more with my minority past, my immigrant past.
Yes.
I assume everyone is racist. There's a little hesitation, no matter what, whenever I'm engaging with someone who's white.
Yeah.
The most obvious is with white, old, crotchety men. But unless I'm engaging with a woman of color or a person of color, I'm automatically assuming a certain level of racism. So yeah. I think maybe through that, when you push against, maybe people are seeing a similarity in you of whiteness. And then when you push against that, I think that's what's surprising. I think it's.
Yeah.
That.
Yes. I think you're spot on.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Well, we didn't talk about food at all. So this was wild episodes in a row.
Two wild episodes. Yeah.
Well, this was fun. Thanks for hanging out, you guys.
Thanks for hanging out.
Thanks again for tuning into Tough Cookie Talks. I'm so glad you're here. If you want to learn more about me and how we can work together, visit my website, itsjennaj.com, or follow and tag me on Instagram at itsjennaj. I would love to hear from you. If you liked this episode and want to hear more, make sure you click subscribe and follow along so that you don't miss a single show. Then take a moment and leave me a 5-star rating and review so that we can help this podcast and this message reach even more people. Have a great week, and we'll talk soon.